And this is Lina Live. I'm Lina Mirmont. Absolutely thrilled to come back. And I have today particularly, absolutely enjoyable show for all of us. And my introduction will be very, very brief in the beginning with my words, just to give you all the hint. But then we will fly with the music again. Of uniquely talented, very refined, beautifully musical, David Lenz, who is coming back for another show. And with your memories about his music, we will start our conversation about his new album with the first song, I wanted to say with his first note. With his first notes, thoughts, and beautiful mood, which he expressed in Sunrise Follows Moon. This is David Lenz and his music. We are, cannot wait to hear. Thank you. And that was David Lance with his first song. He called it Sunrise Follows Moon. And before that, he uses word prelude, which makes me feel particularly at home using this very classical term. David, finally, you are welcome with your human voice in addition to your musical one. How are you? Welcome back. And frankly, I don't have any particular question. Perhaps you just can share with us your sentiments, your feelings about creating this absolutely magnificent album.
Well, hello, Lena. It's nice to be back with you. Actually, after the prelude, we rolled into my arrangement of Please Please Me from the Here Comes the Sun recording. And some of your listeners may remember that we're going back quite a ways with that song, and this whole new recording is my arrangements of music from the Beatles. Please Please Me actually was the very first number one song that the first of many, and my arrangement, of course, quite a bit different than John Lennon in the Beatles version, which was very up-tempo, and of course, you know, a lot of yeah-yeah-yeahs mixed into their version. But and we heard, I'm playing the piano, and you also heard my friend Gary Straustis playing the alto flute, and our good friend Walter Gray on cello.
Well, David, I have to apologize because indeed it was Please Please Me. In fact, I was preparing a little bit of a presumptuous question, pleasing me with what? The music opens so many opportunities for that with all those colors. But coming back to my apology, yes, your first song, Sunrise Follows Moon, is extremely short. And indeed, my mind was pleasantly drowned in many of your songs once I heard it, and then I heard it again. And I absolutely made a choice to start with Please Please Me. However, my soul was in Sunrise Follows Moon. Yes. Well, I hope that you will accept my apology with a bit of a good news, which has to do with having much more time for this program, because initially I thought I will have only half an hour, but it turned out that indeed we can stretch it closer to 45, 50 minutes, and that will give us an opportunity to hear more of your songs. And gives certainly almost full flavor of this absolutely remarkable album. I like to ask you, if you do not mind, to create a little bridge between your first album, Liverpool, I believe it's called, where you established your fantasy world with a fantastic connection with Beatles, and this album, which also ideologically connected to legendary Beatles music, but certainly with a different musical material. How did you find yourself emotionally and perhaps mentally different creating this album?
Well, a couple things happened, Lena. Well, first, when I finished the first album, Liverpool Reimagining the Beatles, I had begun to look at quite a few other songs, thinking that I might want to do maybe not an entire album, but like an EP, like four or five songs. And as I started to go out on the road and tour a bit, I brought out, like I said, I mentioned Gary Strauss, our flute player, and Walter Gray, the cellist, and we went out and started performing. We were actually performing as David Lawns in the Liverpool Trio. So I started to think about how to arrange music just for the three of us, whereas on Liverpool I had a number of other musicians, basses and percussion, etc. So I started to think about arranging just a couple of songs initially that we could play live in addition to the music off of Liverpool. But as I got into the process, as you probably know, there's so many great songs that that John Lennon, Paul McCartney, and George Harrison came up with, as they were the Beatles. Of course, on their solo efforts, they continued on and created, just an amazing body of work. So my challenge after Liverpool was, I need to keep going here. So I think I finally have finished my. I think I've I feel like I've run the gamut, and I feel satisfied now with the release of Here Comes the Sun that I've done a proper tribute. Because when I was growing up as a young teenager, I had some musical instruction, primarily just like a lot of American kids did. We just with piano, a couple different piano teachers that would come to my home and I'd work with them. But I didn't really study much in the way of composition in university. But I did learn quite a bit about music theory in the process of just listening to and playing along with the Beatles music when I was a teenager. And really a good deal of my... My early knowledge of how music is written and created was because of the music of the Beatles and the way that they put their songs together. So kind of in a nutshell, that's kind of how that all came together.
I'm so glad that you brought your some of your memories of your childhood and education, because I think I mentioned in our previous program that usually it is somewhat separation between dates and events in the childhood, and then, yes, some factual information. How did I become truly professional? But I sense that in your situation, it is somewhat marvelous collaboration between somewhat instruction, which didn't kill your love for music, but also it is immediate connection with real music. And Beatles, of course, had this tremendous popularity in the greatest sense of the world. So I think that you had this wonderful merge between learning how to do things and already hearing what those things are, meaning sound, expression, instruments, different voices. And as you mentioned, you've been exposed to so many songs by Beatles. And that brings me to actually a couple of questions. When did you start to compose for a number of instruments? And if I will be a little bit impatient, I wanted to ask you, it is so wonderful that you independent somewhat from human voice, making your instrument sounds indeed like a human voice. So I'm not degrading a human voice, which is one of the most obviously marvelous expression of our personal feelings. But I found out that in one sense, you don't really miss in your music, because colors and such a tremendous diversification of the harmony which you generously sharing with other instruments. So coming back to my questions, when did you start to compose for the mini or chamber orchestra, and how did it feel?
Well, you know, as I, you know, going back a little ways just to give some context to your question, of course, the Beatles had George Martin, who was a wonderful producer and arranger, and he brought classical musicians into the studio. First, probably we all remember when the Beatles put out Yesterday. You know, it was just Paul McCartney playing his guitar with a string quartet, and then George Martin also brought in, as time went on, you know, full orchestras and. And he used a lot of colors with the, you know, the horns, French horns, and different string groups. So that was a big influence on me as a kid, hearing those classical colors, which caused me to begin to listen again to some classical music. So in a way, the Beatles kind of brought me back to listening, not so much studying, but listening to classical music. And then when I had the opportunity in the early 90s to take some of my music and work with an orchestra, I really, at that point, I didn't feel like I was quite ready to do the actual arranging of the other instruments. But I was able to collaborate with Don Davis, a great film music composer. Don is really well known, what became well known later, doing all the music to several of the movies, the Matrix, you know, the Johnny Depp movies, The Matrix. And then he did a Jurassic Park, and he's done quite a bit of work. That was in the early 90s for an album called Skyline Fire Dance. But actually, to answer your question, I've collaborated with other people and arrangers working with other instruments. But on this album, on Here Comes the Sun, it was really the first time that I actually wrote all of the parts out for, you know, I always do my piano arrangements, but I also wrote the parts out for the cello and flute and string bass. So, and it was a lot of fun for me to you know, because I've always can hear the parts, but I just never felt like I was able to really commit by myself. I always had an arranger, so. But I think it worked out nicely, and the guys I was working with were very complimentary, and they seemed to enjoy the parts I came up with, and in the final analysis, it all seems to work together to support the melody. You mentioned that you were saying the music, you were getting the sense of the human, you know, the human voice, which I agree, that's the most divinely inspired instrument of all. But working with the Beatles music and just in my own music in general, I very much rely on the melody. So it was easy for me to keep the melody as the primary focus and then arrange the other instruments around that to either carry the melody or to support the melody.
You touched on something which I'd like to elaborate just for a moment before we will hear your next song. It's working together. I had true pleasure to speak with your one of your partners, Gary Strautzus.
Yes.
And It would be really fantastic if perhaps at one point we can have a group interview, and your wonderful publicist who became an email friend, Lydia Sherwood. I hope one day we will meet, but we certainly created very promising ground for the friendship. Perhaps she can connect with all of you, which I know is a very big challenge, and we can have this collaborative conversation about how indeed music is created and how rehearsals are shaping, what are the challenges. I personally like to know how you finding a balance in between instrumental sound, because we're dealing with some acoustic instruments and some electronic instruments, so there are more challenges with more possibilities. So I will form my question by asking you how indeed you have this process forming for yourself. You compose the first your composition, then you thinking what kind of an instrumentation it might take, and then you meet together, you have some arguments, and then finally you come to some kind of conclusion. I'm taking you through this process. Please tell me where I'm wrong.
That's all good. I mean, those are all the kinds of things that happen, especially in actually, when this project, it went fairly smoothly, luckily enough. I spend a lot of times, you know, usually several weeks at least, on each arrangement for the piano. And once I'm happy with that, I make at least a demo recording of that. And then I started listening, like you were saying, I started to listen to the basic piano arrangement with the idea of adding in, you know, the flute. A lot of times the flute is really because of the register, it serves as sometimes just doubling the melody with the piano, occasionally playing harmony. And the cello itself occasionally will take up the melody, but for the most part, the cello being in a lower register is best used to kind of ground the arrangement, for the low end, and almost not quite bass, but it can definitely come into the bass register. But really, the challenge was just I didn't want the piano or the flute to always be the only instrument playing the melody. So the challenge was trying to pass off the melody and the harmony between all three of us. And I would work with before the three of us got together. I got together with Gary Straustis. He had a little more of a challenge working with my parts, just because Gary is more of an improvisational musician. He likes to just listen to the music and then he just kind of plays it, more as a jazz musician would, just kind of improvising off the melody. But working with Gary is how I began. And then later on, after Gary and I had made sure that the parts that I came up with worked for him, I got together with Walter. Actually, I sent him my rough sketches, and then he would write out his own parts. And for the most part, Walter really liked what I came up with, and he made a few changes based on what he thought would work best. Not too many, which was nice. And then the three of us got together and played the things through. And almost like magic, everything pretty much worked. We didn't have to make too many changes, and there weren't very many arguments. We had a few situations where if there were a lot of unison lines being played, we had to change that up, because sometimes when you're playing unison lines in different registers, it's the intonation, the tuning can be a little bit challenging. So other than you know, changing some of those parts up, we pretty much played the arrangements the way I wrote them.
It is certainly wonderful to hear, particularly because this well-known philosophical progression of getting closer to the perfection can really turn into opposite, and that creates sometimes ego wars and most negative results, which is anything but coming to the perfection. And I believe that you have this harmony and creativity. You probably have some human compatibility, but mostly important, music comes first. And it is very revealing in this album how free, how almost almost like a second breath for you to write these songs. It's just so flowing. Needless to say, no labor I can hear, but I just feel it's some kind of music which you like to come back to, which can be soothing, which can be contemplating, which can be very comforting, and also can be very very engaging in your own internal world. Well, after all these promises which I made verbally, I think we're more than ready to listen to your another song, which called Penny Lane. I will make just a little comment looking at your extremely tasteful and I would say with a touch of exotic flyer, which your publicist sent to me. Penny Lane is symbolizing some kind of, I hate to say sticker, it looks almost like some kind of announcement or some kind of a wording which tells you where you are. If it is just decorative, I understand, but if it has some kind of a symbolism behind of it, please let us know before we will hear your song.
I think you're just referring to some of the artwork that is associated with the album. My graphic designer came up with that idea for two reasons. One, the song Penny Lane, a big hit from the Beatles, and maybe as you know or don't know, Penny Lane is a real street in Liverpool, England. And Liverpool, of course, is where the Beatles and their manager all resided from, grew up and met and worked together and started the Beatles. And both Gary and I took a trip to Liverpool, and we actually got a chance to drive down Penny Lane. And if your listeners may remember the lyrics, and in the lyric of the song, Paul McCartney talks about the barbershop and the roundabout and the firehouse. And all these things are still there on Penny Lane. So as Gary and I drove down Penny Lane, we saw all this, and it was almost like the song, in a way, kind of came to life for us. So putting that little bit of that little street sign on the artwork, Penny Lane, just kind of an iconic way to tie in the song with the city of Liverpool.
And it's done more than tastefully. It's very discreet. It makes you feel very much at home with this flyer, which is truly like a little overture to this album. And now we are extremely ready, I would say, to listen to Penny Lane in wonderful interpretation, which is in the hands of my wonderful guest, and musician and a composer who is talking about his music, his life, and we'll be talking more about that. David Lance, Penny Lane. Thank you. I purposely took a little pause after. That was just so incredibly beautiful. I hate to use word resourceful in a harmony, but that somehow I can describe this just most unexpected, most elegantly crafted harmonic progression. You're just a master. And I like to connect to your comment regarding Gary Strauss's inclination to improvise more. Of course, the nature of flute will lead more to the mono line than harmony. But I certainly would not take away anything from your talent of an improviser. And I found that that song has a fantastic proportion in between, very well formed, with a climax to the end, and yet it was such an improvisational, fantastic journey. I immensely enjoyed it. I hope you did too.
I had a great time putting that song together, and I kept it pretty close to, you know, Paul McCartney's, you know, original, his, for the most part, his chord progression and his melody, but I did take a few liberties, especially in the beginning and the end, and a little bit in the middle, and, you know, added some of my own ideas that I tried to keep, you know, thematically close to the way Paul McCartney wrote the song, and then of course, you know, arranging it for the piano always lends itself to its own, you know, its own kind of sounds, I'm glad that you appreciated, because I always, you know, I do these, I make little changes, and I don't really know if anyone really picks up on it or what they think, and, you know, hopefully they like the direction that I took the music in. And many of the other songs on the Here Comes the Sun album, I did take quite a few liberties. With Penny Lane, I just took a few. I wanted to really retain as close as possible to just the spirit and the of the original. And so thank you, Lena. I'm glad you enjoyed that.
Well, you know, we professionals can somewhat put in words what we hear, but we also understand that it's what you enjoy, what you can connect with, and it's not always delightful. It is the connection. And that brings another question, which I like to ask you, and if you will not mind, we will step out a little bit away from your very music and talk about your vision, because I understand that you had somewhat of a dilemma when you started to write your music being inspired by Beatles. Beatles are incredibly known, and all this melody already been in place, yet you found your own home, and I'm glad you did. I'd like to ask you, what is your feeling regarding music, if we will talk about global world? I will be a little bit more specific. Let's talk about heavy metal music. I will give you my understanding why such extreme sound is so popular. What is your take on the heavy metal music, and why do you think it's so popular?
Well, first of all, you're talking about the electric guitar, you know, and it was kind of, I think when you take an instrument like the guitar and you amplify it, heavy metal probably is the logical result, you know, because if you give a guitar player, you give them an amplifier, and away they go. So I think it's, you know, there is in some of the best heavy metal, there it's almost as if the guitar itself is, when they hit a power chord, they're trying to, really what they're attempting to do is to sound like an entire orchestra. So sometimes there can be a very powerful element to it. And of course, at its worst, it becomes a lot of noise that you may not want to sit through. But I think any genre, you talk about any genre of music, you're always going to find a few masters at the top, and then there's going to be a lot of people that are playing in that style that maybe aren't as accomplished, and sometimes that will tend to give a particular genre of music a bad name. And but heavy metal is just one more expression of popular music, and primarily in the hands of guitar players and rock and roll musicians. I mean, I was really a fan of Jimi Hendrix when he first came out, because he was, I don't know if you would call Jimmy a really heavy metal guitarist. He was very creative, and he was one of the first guitarists to kind of take the guitar into a different, different stratosphere, really. I mean, and since he's, left the planet, there's really not that many people that have carried on, because they just didn't have the same vision that Jimi Hendrix had. But I don't know if I answered your question, but
no, you shared your thoughts, and
yes.
I will share with you mine,
yes.
Which perhaps a little bit more gloomy than yours. I frankly was totally lost, somewhat a bit disturbed when for the first time I heard this music. I felt it's almost like a screaming emotions. I felt that since it's so incredibly popular with the young generation, that there is a reason for that. And the reason I found after listening to it, that these emotions, frustrations, pain, fear, which young people are going through today, find in this music very much close to their soul. They don't have courage to talk about this because it's not very popular to talk about some as it's called negative emotions. So this is abstract form of human expression, perhaps can connect to this very frustrating souls. So I was not really in a rush to condemn this music, even though I just simply cannot listen to it for more than just a few minutes. But I was truly puzzled, and I found my own maybe very subjective answer. I don't know if you can find some sense in what I'm saying.
Oh no, I definitely can. I think you kind of nailed it when you said that this kind of music for many of the listeners, it kind of helped maybe put their feelings about life, which, let's face it, planet Earth has got a lot of problems, and we are experiencing some dark days. And what better than art or music to maybe express some of those things that can't be put into words, especially some of the negative feelings and some of the pain and suffering that people feel, especially younger people. They may be frustrated, because of politics or because of religion or because of, the economic situation. I think you find the same thing, maybe with hip-hop and rap music. You've got, kids from the inner cities that are dealing with, the reality of living on the street and things probably that you and I don't experience, in our daily lives, but they do. So every generation has a kind of music that really helps to express kind of the view from, what they would call real life or life on the street. And I think there is even though we may not like the style or the sound of the music, it is serving a great purpose in that it can give voice and expression to some of the more negative aspects of living on, living here on Earth.
I certainly call most genuine freedom of speech, because fortunately sound is so abstract and yet so concrete that one can find the most freedom in that. And coming back to your music, I wanted to thank you. It sounds very simplistic, it is just so fantastic to have your music, because in one sense, you are very true to most classic, fantastic traditions, yet it's you are with your voices, your thoughts, and we can very clearly identify David Lenz. And we always feeling that you have this merge, and it's so, so natural for you. I think I will justify my last points and bring all of us to your another song, I'm the Walrus. It's not that these songs I deliberately put in order. It's just I took liberty to pick up songs which perhaps more close to my emotions, to my liking. So I would like to say that in the album, those last three songs which I did pick up has nothing to do with the order. However, there is a certain choreography of the emotions, the way you combine those songs. And it's almost a continuity, almost like a little symphony, which I would say, for example, from Mother Nature's song, which we will not hear today, but it certainly leads for no one. There is a continuity, and yet it's extremely, extremely different. So we just heard Penny Lane with a little historic and personal comments to it. Maybe you can lead us with your comments to I'm the Walrus.
Well, as I said earlier, we had been touring and performing as a Liverpool trio, and I was in the process of putting together music for this new Here Comes the Sun CD, and I wanted to have a piece of music that we could play live that would almost be what, people would refer to in show business as a showstopper. I mean, a really, exciting piece, a piece that would really have a dramatic ending. And so I started to look at the Beatles catalog, and this was one of the pieces that I found that would be very compelling. It was a bit of a mystery how I was going to actually arrange it, initially for the piano and then for the whole group. And I have to say, it took me off and on. I didn't work on it consistently, but off and on, over 6 months to become satisfied with just the arrangement. And then it took quite a while in the studio to get, to perfect our overall arrangement. But and the Walrus itself, it was kind of one of these strange songs that really had a life other than being a musical composition. If you listen to the original by the Beatles, George Martin, their producer, brought in quite a bit of other sounds that the band were not making. There was recordings of in the background of like a radio and someone, speaking, reciting Shakespeare, and there was a lot of strange, the Beatles were making all kinds of strange sounds, and the orchestra was playing, and so it was, I listened to it, and it was, a very popular song by the Beatles, but very, it's kind of a crazy mixed up sound overall, but very, very passionate, from John Lennon's point of view, who wrote the song. Anyway, long story short, it was quite a challenge for me to make this, kind of make it my own, but still really retain the overall effect of John Lennon's melody. So I think we accomplished that.
I'm sure you did, because I did hear it, and now we will hear it again. But you just expressed this fantastic cliche when you combine with old with new, something which someone else created and happened to be very close to your soul and your talent. And yes, this song is extremely unusual. I like personally very much that you put it towards the end as already something ear can find very innovative, preparing with your classic language and your style. So let's hear it with a little bit of a different ear. And different, perhaps, exotic expectations. This is I Am the Walrus with David Lenz's Fantasy. Wow, what is the firework? It's probably very hard to imagine that just a very few instruments being playing. Unbelievable. It sounds as a almost nearly full orchestra. Purely fantastic. David, there's a very important point in your life, very high point. You've been nominated for Grammy. Talk to us about this.
Well, you know, the Grammys, of course, it's kind of the it's the top honor in our field of recorded music. Of course, you know, being nominated for music and as an Academy Award is an amazing honor as well. But the Grammys is really just all about it's really about your peers in the music industry. So for myself, after having, I'd had quite a bit of success in terms of just, you know, selling my records and concerts and such. But in the year 2000, it was really a kind of like almost like having a cherry on top of your sundae, just to have the acknowledgement of, like I said, the acknowledgement of your peers. So yeah, it was a great honor to be singled out, and you know, I don't know what else to say. It was just if I would have won the award, it would have made it maybe a little bit sweeter. But just to be nominated was really just very exciting. And I'll always remember that as, you know, kind of one of the high points of my career.
And it's always sometimes a bit clumsy to talk about your own personal emotions. So I think you said it almost all. And I will just add that probably gave you an extra injection of inspiration to create your first album, Liverpool. And also, I believe that Liverpool has a little bit echo because the end of the album, which we're talking about, is indeed a farewell from your Liverpool album. Is that correct?
Yeah, really. You know, if you look at the Liverpool album, it opens up with kind of what I call an emotional overture, a piece of music that I wrote that kind of incorporates a little bit of the melodic information or kind of musical quotations from the Beatles in my own composition. And then to close the second album, the Here Comes the Sun album, I kind of felt like I was going full circle. And in a way was saying, at least in musical terms, kind of, you know, goodbye to, you know, to this musical journey of going through, you know, first physically going to Liverpool, but going through all the emotions of looking back at my childhood and looking back at all of the amazing music that, you know, these four men made. Which I think people will look back as kind of, in a way, it'll be kind of the classical music of our generation, because it really has, it seems every generation rediscovers the music of the Beatles. My generation was lucky enough to kind of live through the music as it was being created and released. But so yeah, for myself, ending the album with, initially it was a song that I was tipping my hat to both George Harrison and George Martin, but having the subtitle be Liverpool Farewell, I just thought kind of put the period at the end of the sentence.
I think it's a wonderful decision also conceptually, because you connect in your first and second album, and you actually indicated some of it in your explanation. But pretend no one heard prior, listened to your music, anything about you. No one knows your story. And just listen to those two albums. There is a relationship. And it's a wonderful connection, very natural. And with your explanation, it makes even more sense. So I cannot find a better ending and a continuation at the same time with your last song, which you called Sir George. And I just wanted to remind to our listeners that we have this very unique time in the music human and emotional sense with a very fine musician, artist, and I would guess not such a bad human being, David Lenz. And we will finalize our program with his song, which called Sir George.
Thank you.
for a poetic fulfillment, if I may say. And that is almost emotional, logical to finish my program with David Lance. And David, your last words, you certainly deserve it.
Well, I just wanted to say, Lena, I really appreciate the time on your show. Continued success with all of your endeavors. And just want to wish all the listeners a blessed day. Thank you very much again for letting me and letting your listeners take a little look at the music that I've been creating here in the last couple of years.
Well, we took more than just a little look. And if you just follow helpful tradition and tell us all where we can find you, which called in today's world website. It's not enough to have a music site. We need to have a website to find your music.
Yes, well, just my name, davidlanz.com. My last name is L-A-N-Z, as in zebra. So you can go to davidlanz.com. And nowadays, of course, I'm on all these social media sites. I'm on Facebook and Twitter. I've got a blog on Google+, and all those things. Actually, if you go to davidlanz.com, you'll be able to find little buttons on the homepage that would connect you to all of the other various sites we have an opportunity to get ourselves out even farther into the world via all the social media. So it's all there, and then all my music is available not only on my site, but of course at iTunes and Amazon and most of the well-known music sites that sell music. So I'm fairly well represented out there. So hopefully your audience, if they're interested, they can find more out about me and they can, get a chance to listen to a little bit more of my music and take some of that home with them.
Well, you're certainly very versatile, not only in music polyphony, but in internet polyphony just as well. I'm a little bit jealous of that, and maybe I will take some lessons from you. But this is very helpful, but mostly it was more than enjoyable. Wish you mostly continue to be yourself with this wonderful world of the past, with the creation music for the new pages of our times, for new pages for our thoughts, and you're doing this so well. I will say goodbye, and I will also thank David for his time, and also will have an opportunity to thank his fantastic publicist. What a pleasure to have a wonderful collaboration between the artist and the publicist, Lydia Sherwood. On this note, I will conclude my another program, which was dedicated to music new album, Here Comes the Sun, with David Lance, composer. And I would say that many, many moments which we can find with the music, I call it a true freedom of speech, will give us all more connections, more joy, less stress in this quite complex global world. And with final music, I will see you on the air another time.